Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning study. The fall holy days are behind us now, and hopefully many of you have come out of your sukkah, you've come out of the fall holy days, and you are refreshed and excited. And so one of the things that I wanted to say is that this time of year, being that the fall, it's starting to cool off in most areas, not quite cool enough here for me yet, but it is getting there. It is a time where we begin to reflect and we think about the new year, at least according to the Jewish calendar. In fact, according to the Jewish calendar, as many of you know, those who are following the annual cycle of readings are beginning again with Genesis. Genesis 1:1. So in synagogues around the world on today, people are reading Bereishit. They're reading Genesis 1:1 through chapter 6, verse 8. And so they're a little bit behind us now. Now they're going to catch up, right? Because we're going through a much longer process, a much slower approach to the Torah readings. A couple of things that I wanted to say. According to the Jewish calendar, yesterday was Simchat Torah, rejoicing in the Torah. Now, on Simchat Torah, one of the things that they do, I find interesting, since we're working through the triennial cycle of readings, they read the last part of Deuteronomy and immediately follow up with the beginning part of Genesis. So they read chapter 33 of Deuteronomy through the end. So chapter 33, verse 1 of Deuteronomy through chapter 34, verse 12. And then immediately they read Genesis chapter 1:1 through 2:3. And what's interesting about that is that both of those sections of Scripture represent triennial readings. So this is a pretty ancient practice. It's drawing on the list that we're following. And so, you know, I posted just this week on our United Israel group page, I posted a new chart that I've been working on in regards to the book that I'm writing. I'm writing a book now, and it's caused me to go back into this triennial cycle of readings. So I posted a revised version of that list. I encourage you to get that, print it out, and look at it. But whether a group is following the annual cycle of readings or the triennial cycle of readings, the purpose and the point should be the same. We should have the same goal in mind, and I'm going to read that to you, and it comes from Deuteronomy. This is just a bit of an introduction before I get into the class today. But in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 10 and 11, I think expresses why we would be wanting to study the Torah in the first place. So it begins in Deuteronomy 31, verse 10, and Moses commanded them at the end of every 7 years, at the set time of the year of release, at the Feast of Booths, Sukkot, when all Israel comes to appear before Jehovah your God at the place which he will choose, you shall read this Torah before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, little ones, and the sojourner within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear Jehovah your God, and be careful to do all the words of this instruction, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear Jehovah your God as long as you live in the land which you are going over the Jordan to possess it. So the idea is that Torah reading and going through these stories should do a couple of things, and you just heard it. It should cause us to learn to fear and honor and so forth Jehovah our God. So that's our goal. Now, according to Josephus, there has been since antiquity a form of weekly instruction based on the Torah since ancient times. Josephus records that in his works. The Torah, let me just say this as I begin to share the class today. The Torah should serve as a basis of our understanding, no matter what we study in the Bible. So whatever topic we're talking about, whatever subject we're studying, I think it's very important to begin at the beginning, to to go back into these foundational stories and to build and go forward. But it's certainly not the end. It's not the only thing that we should study. You know, I look around on the web now. Now, 30 years ago, it wasn't like this. But now, if you type in groups studying Torah, you're going to find countless groups, various groups from Orthodox to even non-Jewish groups to Messianic groups. A lot of people are studying the Torah. And I think that that's a great thing. But also, over the last several weeks, I've been thinking about, you know, how a lot of people stop there. They really don't go into the prophets and the writings, I think, and that's sort of creating another problem. You know, if the emphasis becomes only on the Torah and we leave out the rest of the Hebrew Bible, the Revelation, then we're not going to fully understand the intended plan. So, one of the things that's important is that when we begin to study topics and themes discovered in the Bible's first books, we ought to follow those through the remainder of the biblical books and take in, as it were, the whole Bible. And one of the things I mentioned in writing my book, I'm looking at this particular two-volume set is called The Bible as Read and Preached in the Old Synagogue. It's a work that was started, the two volumes, were started by Jacob Mann. He passed away. He didn't finish the work. One of his students picked it up. But the purpose of this work is to look through ancient sources and determine some of these ancient sermons and how they were built. And quite often, they would pull from a Torah story, an associated prophet reading, and then go into the writings of the rest of the Bible, be they the Psalms or what have you. And so one of the things that I think is important is that we search for themes. Now, in our continuation of the Joseph saga, we are now in the 41st chapter. Now, we're not going to push all the way through because we're following this ancient reading cycle. This particular Torah portion, according to the markings in the text of the Hebrew Bible, is sectioned off. Genesis chapter 41, verse 1 through verse 37. Now, next week, we pick up in verse 38. You'll see a good stopping point today, even though you might think, oh, man, we ought to go to the next verse. You have to be patient. That's for next week. So we're going to go to verse 37 today. It features the dreams of Pharaoh. The dreams of Pharaoh. It's all we're going to cover today, the dreams of Pharaoh. Now, in the overall Joseph saga, one of the things that I need to point out is that this is the third of three sets of dreams that have a very important part or play an important part in the life of Joseph. So if you remember, the first two dreams, the first pair, were Joseph's dreams, recorded in Genesis 37. The second pair of dreams are those of two fellow captives. Remember the two courtiers of the Pharaoh's court who the Pharaoh got mad at, he put them in jail, they had dreams and so forth. And then the third pair have to do with Pharaoh's dreams, and that's where we're going to focus. The first two that Joseph had deal with or foretold his future role. Now, I think that this not only speaks historically, but prophetically. We're going to see that as we move further into the Joseph saga. Once he tells these dreams, they ultimately lead to him being put into Egypt. So Joseph has to get to Egypt in order for the story to work out. So the dreams, if you think about it, ultimately led to his being put into Egypt. His brothers get mad at him and they sell him into slavery, and you know that story, we went through it. When the second set of dreams come, his fellow prisoners' dreams, as that story unfolds, we recognize that this is preparing Joseph for his exaltation. He doesn't get exalted right away. In fact, he remains in jail. But nonetheless, it set him up. It gave him a reputation that was later recalled. We're going to see that in today's reading. It gave him a reputation as one who had a skill of interpreting, opening dreams. All right, now the dreams of Pharaoh are the focus of today. So we're going to open up, and I'm going to read to you from the dream of Pharaoh. And this is going to be, as we do every week, I'll be reading from the very literal, transparent English Bible, beginning in chapter 41, verse 1 of Genesis. And it was from the end of 2 years of days, and Pharaoh was dreaming, and look, he was standing by the stream, and look, going up from the stream were 7 cows, beautiful of sight and fat of flesh, and they pastured in the reeds. And look, 7 other cows went up after them from the stream, bad of sight and thin of flesh. They stood near the cows on the lip of the stream, and the cows bad of sight and the thin of flesh ate up 7 cows, beautiful of sight and of fat, and Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed a second time. And look, 7 ears were going up on one stalk, fat and good. And look, 7 ears, thin and blasted by an east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the 7 fat and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and look, it was a dream. And it was in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called all the learned ones of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh recounted to them his dream. And there was no opener of them to Pharaoh. And the chief of the drink bearers spoke with Pharaoh, saying, "My error I remember today. Pharaoh was angry against his servants, and he gave me into the guarding of the house of the chief of slaughters, me and the chief of the ones baking. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he, a man according to the opening of his dream. We dreamed. And there was with us a lad, a Hebrew, a servant to the chief of the slaughters, and we recounted to him, and he opened to us our dreams, a man according to his dream he opened. And it was, as he had opened to us, thus it was. Me he caused to return upon my position, and him he hanged. And Pharaoh sent and called Ward Joseph, and they caused him to run of the pit, and he shaved and changed his outer garments and came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I dreamed a dream, and there is none opening it. And I have heard upon you saying that you hear a dream to open it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, Not me. Elohim will answer Pharaoh with peace. And Pharaoh spoke toward Joseph, In my dream, look, I was standing by the lip of stream. And look, from the stream, 7 cows went up, fat of flesh and beautiful of form, and they pastured in the reeds. And look, 7 other cows went up after them, thin and bad of shape, exceedingly, and lean of flesh. I have not seen any as bad of as these in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and the bad cows ate the first 7 fat cows, and they came toward their middle, and it was not known that they came toward their middle, and their sight was bad as in the beginning. And I awoke, saw in my dream, and look, 7 ears were going up on one stalk, full and good. And look, 7 ears, withered, thin, being scorched with an east wind, sprouted after them. And the thin ears swallowed the 7 good ears. I toward the learned ones, I said, and there was none telling to me. And Joseph said toward Pharaoh, The dream of Pharaoh, it's one. What the Elohim is doing, he has told to Pharaoh. The 7 good cows, 7 years are they, and the 7 good ears, 7 years are they. The dream is one. And the 7 thin and bad cows that went up after them, 7 years are they, and the 7 thin ears, scorched with an east wind, are 7 years of hunger. This is the spoken thing I've spoken toward Pharaoh, that which the Elohim is doing, he's shown Pharaoh. Look, 7 years are coming of large satiety in all the land of Egypt, and 7 years of hunger will arise after them, and all the satiety in the land of Egypt will be forgotten, and the hunger will finish the land. The satiety will not be known in the land from the face of the hunger, the one after, for weighty it will be exceedingly. And upon the repeating of the dream toward Pharaoh 2 times, then the thing is made firm from the Elohim, and the Elohim hurries to do it. And now let Pharaoh see a man understanding and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh make and single out those who single out over the land, and take a fifth of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of satiety, and they will gather all the eatable things of these good years, the ones coming, and heap up grain under the hand of Pharaoh, eatable things in the cities, and they will guard it. And the eatable things will be a numbered thing for the land for the 7 years of hunger, which will be in the land of Egypt. And the land is not cut off by hunger, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. Now, let me tell you some thoughts that I have on this particular Torah reading. The first thing that I want to do is I want you to go with me to Genesis chapter 40, Genesis chapter 40, and verse 14. Because the last time we were studying through this, in the last class on Genesis, we discussed this very thing. Now, after Joseph opens, as it were, the dream of the two who were in prison with him, he gives this interpretation, and he says this, verse 14, "Remember me when it's well with you, and do me the kindness, I pray you, to make mention of me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I've done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon." So he tells him, look, when you get out of here, you're going to be in a position to get me out. Don't forget me. Now look down at verse 23. "Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." You only have one job. Just don't forget me when you get out of here. And he's so excited. He gets out of jail. He gets back restored to his position. He's in the court of the Pharaoh. See, we tend to think about this, but let me ask you this. Do you think it was time yet? It may not have been time yet, either for Joseph. You know, I mean, he could have gone to Pharaoh, but this builds the drama of the story. I think Joseph's character is still not developed to the place where it needs to be. He probably has some more lessons to learn. But once this situation arises, it's the perfect opportunity to get Joseph out. Now, look at the next verse, chapter 41, verse 1. After 2 whole years, see, some of you, John included, were saying, man, we got to get back into this study. Make us wait for weeks. It was only 2 weeks. See, I was doing that on purpose so you'd kind of feel the story. A week equals a year. Sort of a prophetic thing going on here. But anyway, so 2 years after the release, and then Pharaoh has a dream. Now, central themes of this particular dream. 2 themes really stand out in this reading. You know what they are? Famine and dreams. Famine and dreams. These are the two key themes that I see. Now, as you'll recall last week, there's this word that occurs only in chapter 40 and 41 of Genesis. We'll talk a little bit about that. But that has to do with dreams. I'm talking about if you listed the two major headings, famine and dream, and they're combined in this particular story. Now, one of the things that I want to point out, because this builds not only on the story itself, on the narrative contained in Genesis, but I think it looks forward to prophetic fulfillment because both of these themes, both famine and dreams, have to do with and play a part in the reunion of Joseph and his brothers in a prophetic sense, right? So both of these can be applied both to the narrative that we're working in as well as certain prophetic texts. Now, as we've seen in other patriarchal stories, One of the things that is important to point out is that, and make this very clearly, is that the Joseph saga does indeed, look beyond the historical narrative. It provides, I think, insight into the prophetic fulfillment. We'll touch on this a little bit later in the class today. Now, one of the things that is important to notice in this particular story is that we have different voices. What do I mean by that? We have the narrator's voice, okay? Now, whether you're traditional and you say this is Moses or you say it was another narrator, it's a narrator. In other words, it's not Pharaoh. We do hear from Pharaoh. It's not Joseph. We do hear from Joseph. This is someone telling sort of a brief summary recap of the dream. It tells us after two whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. Okay? So it sets the stage, if you will. When you read this, you notice that it's someone outside of the events describing for us what is taking place in the narrative. All right? And it gives us the content. It tells us about the dream. It even lets us know a little bit about Pharaoh's feeling after he dreams the dream. It talks about his spirit is troubled, right? You know, he's very, very distraught after having this dream, which is repeated, and the fact that no one can tell him. We learn all of that in the summary, and we also know that there's a lack of an interpretation. We don't know what the dream means. All right, that's part of the drama. It builds to the next part. Now, we also have the voice of the previously forgetful chief butler. All right, he's also in the story. After the narrator gives his spiel, the chief butler says, "Oh, I forgot. My error is on me." Meanwhile, Joseph is there going, 2 years, man, come on, think about me. But he doesn't. So we do have the voice of the chief butler. And then we have the voice of Pharaoh. Now, I want you to think with me. Imagine the court of Pharaoh, all right? And in the court of Pharaoh, as we read through this story, there is a sense of immediacy. There's a sense of urgency. The Pharaoh has had a dream. He needs the meaning told to him, and none of the wise men can help. This is a bad deal. He tells them the dream. All he needs from them is to interpret it, but they can't. Now, you would think that somebody along the way would have made something up, at least give it a shot. But they don't. What we get in the story is that we're left with this unsolvable night dream, and Pharaoh is looking for some help here. Now, once the chief butler reminds himself and then tells Pharaoh about the Hebrew lad who had been in jail with him, you get the sense of urgency really coming out. It says that they rush him. He changes his garments. Now, remember what I've said over the past several in Joseph's story. We have to follow the change of clothes. It's almost without exception, when a key event in the life of Joseph comes up, we notice that the narrator who's telling the story reveals a change of garments. And so it is here. Joseph takes off his prison garments. They clean him up. Prepare him, they bring him in before Pharaoh. Now, one of the things that I'd like to point out, too, is that you have a difference in the way the narrator tells the story and the way Pharaoh tells the story. When the chapter allows Pharaoh to tell it, I want you to read these closely on your own. When the narrator, he's sort of just the facts. If Pharaoh had a dream, he's standing by the Nile, there are these cows, there are these stalks, there are these, you know, just sort of matter of fact. When Pharaoh tells it, you ought to feel it. You know, he adds details that the narrator left out. Why? Because he knows them. It's very fresh on his mind. One of the things, look at 41 verse 19, just as an example. 41:19. And seven other cows came up after them, poor, very gaunt and thin, such as I had never seen in all the land of Egypt. Right? So that's not in the narrator's dream recount. See, he wants you to know, he's trying to tell Joseph, you have to understand me. These cows, I've never seen anything. They're this skinny. See, he makes a little bit more drama there. Now, look down at verse 20. And the thin and gaunt cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Now, look, here's what he adds. But when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as gaunt as at the beginning. See, that's not a part that the narrator told us. He's saying these things are so bad. Even after they ate these fat, healthy cows, you couldn't even tell they'd eaten them. No difference whatsoever. So he's giving these vivid images, telling more detail, and I think that's important. Now, Pharaoh wants one thing, and only one thing. He wants to know what it means. It's all he needs. It's troubled him. It has his spirit anxious. And thankfully, there was a Hebrew boy who happened to have this particular gift, but he's going to give credit where credit's due. So we're going to look at this. Look at verse 15 of 41. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can open it. There's no one who can crack the code, basically, interpret it, tell its meaning. And I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can open it. So that's why he's got Joseph there. I've heard that you can do this. You've got this ability, and that's why you're here. Now watch what Joseph says. Joseph answered Pharaoh, not me. The first thing he says, not me. Now he has every opportunity to say, well, you know, they do say I'm pretty good at this. I mean, you know, I happen to have a little bit of a gift in this. You know, that's one thing that I think is important in these stories. I received an interesting phone call. Well, I receive those all the time, but this particular person started telling me about all these fantastic gifts that God's given them. And it just, to me, to my ear, and I don't know, maybe this person is this gifted. If they are, and you heard the phone conversation I heard, you'd be amazed. But I think when I read this, it presents a little bit different attitude. Almost like, not, it's not me. But I do serve a God who can give the interpretation. You see the difference, right? He says very clearly, let's see, verse 16, not me, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, this isn't the first time. Joseph has learned this lesson. Go back to chapter 40 and verse 8. Now, this is when he is placed in the position of authority in the prison, and the two guys have the bad dreams, you know, and they really look bad when Joseph walks in. Hey, guys, how you doing? He sees that their countenance has fallen, and he asks them what's going on. They had a dream. They couldn't interpret it. Look at verse 8 of chapter 40. We've had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me. Right? Now, he's not saying he's God. He's going to say, I'll ask God what it means. Okay? So, now, if you look back at chapter 41, I want to highlight something that's consistent along these lines. 41, verse 25, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has revealed, by the way, he doesn't use a divine name. Throughout these texts, he uses Elohim, right? God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. So notice he's pointing. Your dream, he tells him, comes from heaven. And God is warning you, basically, about what's coming. Now, look down at verse 28. It is, as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he's about to do. So he's making that point very clearly. Now look down at verse 32. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. See, so everything about the dream, about the content, and about where the dream comes from is attributed by Joseph to God. Now, I'm going to build on this because I think it's important as we think through and we make a connection between the narrative here and towards the prophetic fulfillment, okay? So we learn that the two dreams are one. All right, we learn that God is showing Pharaoh what he's about to do, and that by doubling it, it indicates that it's going to come about soon. Now, there are a lot of people, both secular and religious, who put a lot of emphasis on dreams. And if I were one who dreamed and remembered my dreams, which I am generally not, I would think about some of these things that are covered in the biblical text. You know, you've heard people say, if you dream and you're looking out a window, it means this. Or if you dream and I don't know those kind of things. I'm not an expert on dreams. Plenty of people have developed science and pseudoscience about dreams and their interpretation. The key here, I think, when we're working through biblical stories is that both the content of the dream comes from God as well as the meaning, right? Joseph gives some insight as to what that might be. Now, beyond the interpretation of the dream, Joseph offers some practical advice to deal with the events foretold by the dream. Notice he says you should appoint overseers, right? And he starts describing a certain character that ought to be in charge of this. And they ought to take a fifth during the plentiful years and kind of store it, right? So you got to prepare. Because he tells him you're going to have 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. So you ought to prepare during the full times to prepare for the times of famine. Because remember the story of the cows and the stalks. It's going to be so bad that the only way to survive is to be fully prepared going into, don't waste. In other words, you're going to have plenty right now. You need to take advantage of that because you're about to go into the worst times you've ever seen. The story ends today and the proposal seems good. So the idea is that everything about this that he's brought up, first of all, the Pharaoh is satisfied that everything that Joseph has told him is dead on. All right? Now, this story reminds me of another story, and it builds in my understanding that we'll bring into next week's class more so about how this has to do with the latter days. Joseph is not the only Hebrew who's gifted with this ability. Dreams would, according to the biblical text, always be a link between the divine sphere and the human. It is a way, according to the biblical text, in which God can communicate to us. Now, I want to cover a few of those passages just while we're on the subject of dreams. And if you'll go with me to the book of Bamidbar, to the book of Numbers, chapter 12. And you'll recall the story, but I won't go into the context as much as to say that this is Jehovah speaking, and the audience is Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Verse 6, and he said, hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, Jehovah, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Now, Moses is a different case, and it goes on to talk about Moses. But generally, and biblically speaking, the way that God would communicate to his people is through a prophet. Deuteronomy chapter 18 is a good base text for that, right? And people said, we don't want to hear from God. We would rather that a certain person, male or female, there are female prophets, right? That God would speak to them, and then they would tell us kind of what you want us to hear. The idea is that that communication is generally coming to them in a vision, in a dream. All right. Now, the word for dream is chalom, and you can do a study of all the occurrences. I won't go through all of the occurrences of dream, but the idea is that it's connected, A, to prophecy, B, and primarily to the idea of God communicating with humanity. Now, the lack of that is also interesting. In other words, if you're not hearing from God, so let's look at a couple of passages where that's the case. Look with me to 1 Samuel chapter 28. 1 Samuel 28, and I'm going to read a couple of verses. This, by the way, is, I love Samuel, 1 and 2 Samuel. I love these historical books. So Samuel is dead, and Saul is looking for an answer, but he's not getting an answer from God. He's not hearing from God. So he goes to the witch at Endor, and he wants to have a seance. He wants to call her back up. In our area, we have the, what's that chick's name? Sister Eve. Yeah. Evidently, she does pretty good business because, like, if you look in her parking lot, there are boats and mobile homes and cars. She's got a car lot, yeah. She's got a car lot because people go to this woman and she conjures up. I guess that's what she does. I've never been there, and I won't go there. But Saul is so desperate to hear from God that he, and by the way, he has made this forbidden in all of his territory. But he goes anyway. He goes to the witch at Endor, and he conjures up, calls up. Now look in verse 6, 1 Samuel 28. And when Saul inquired of Jehovah, Jehovah did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim. You know, you've heard of the Urim and the Tumim, or by prophets. So he's like, he doesn't know where to go. He is totally cut off. That's the way to call it, Dave. He wants to know what to do. He's desperate for an answer, but he's not getting one. Now look down at verse 15. After he calls up, and by the way, it does work. According to the biblical text, this is Samuel. It says in verse 15, then Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And Saul answered, I'm in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore, I have summoned you to tell me what I shall do. This is an interesting story. I mean, Saul is telling him. Now, it's not a bad, you know, I mean, it's not a good thing that he tells him. In fact, he tells him, you're going to die. Samuel had this way about him. He was pretty rough, right? Remember, he hacks up Agag and, you know, I mean, he's a tough old crotchety prophet. And he's mad. He's been awakened. So anyway, but see, the idea is that there are ways in which God is able to communicate with and has chosen, he can communicate anyway, but he's chosen to communicate according to these ways, the Urim and the Tumim, the prophets and the dreams, okay? Now, Daniel is very interesting in regards to the story that we're reading today. And I want you to go with me to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, verse 17. Now, we know from the story of Daniel that there were four Hebrew youths, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These four. Now look down at verse 17, chapter 1 of Daniel. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all letters and wisdom. That's something a lot of you have. You have, you know, maybe not God-given, but you have knowledge and learning and skill in letters and wisdom. But look at this. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at this point, we're just told that Daniel has this ability. Now, I want you to think about Joseph, because Daniel and Joseph have some things in common. I think a lot of times people jump into the book of Daniel, you know, because it's got some cool stuff in it, and they really want to open up the meaning of Daniel, but they don't include all these other things which can shed light on Daniel's meaning. So, let's talk about some of the similarities just off the top between Daniel and Joseph, okay? Daniel was a captive. Joseph is a captive. Remember, he tells the chief butler, I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. Well, Daniel could say the same thing, right? He's among the captives in Babylon. So they have this thing in common. The ruler of the day has a dream and needs it interpreted. So Joseph, that's Pharaoh. Pharaoh has a dream. He looks, tries to get help from the wise men, his own wise men, no help there. And then it just so happens that there is a Hebrew in the house who has this gift. In the story in Daniel, something similar happens. We have, in this particular story, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he needs help with it. Now, he's a little bit seemingly more, how would you say, hard than Pharaoh, at least the way we read the story. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but now let's go ahead. Remember the story of Nebuchadnezzar. What he says is, he calls all the wise men and he says, boys, girls, here's the deal. I had a dream. It's really troubling me. So you are going to tell me my dream and what it means. And you can imagine how this went. It's like a press conference. They're all in there and the Pharaoh's up there. And he's tweeting. Yeah. But he basically says, you're going to tell me my dream and its meaning or I'll kill you. Now, you know what they said? They said, that's hard. Look at verse 10 of chapter 2 in Daniel. The Chaldeans answered the king, there's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and none can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So they're like, you're asking for something that can't be done except by gods, and they're not here. We're men. We're wise men, indeed, gifted. We've got all these talents. But you've asked something that no one has ever asked before. And he said, well, that's the deal. You're going to tell me? Look at verse 12. he gets angry. Because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. You know what? He's fed up with religion. Basically said, you guys have had a free ticket too long. If you're really gifted, if you really have insight, you're gonna prove it right here. It's death. It's a pretty cool story, isn't it? Now, Daniel hears all the commotion about this, and he basically, I'm paraphrasing obviously, basically says, what's everybody so worked up about? Just, you know, I'll go home and pray about it, and I'll tell him the meaning, which is exactly what he does. All right? He goes and he prays, and God gives him the meaning, and we're going to talk more about this next week, because I don't want to get too much into this, because the stories progress, as do the Torah readings. So we're going to talk about Genesis 41:38 and into 42, and we're going to bring more of this Daniel story together in the next week's class. But I do want to say that what happens in both cases with Pharaoh in Genesis and with Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel, the end result is basically the same. A Hebrew is exalted. All right? I think that this is indicative of something that points towards a prophetic fulfillment. It's very important that we not miss this. Now, but for now, it's very important that we think about and present, or let's say it this way, to present a present reality in regards our themes of dreams and famine. Go with me to the well-known passage in the book of Amos. We're going to go to Amos chapter 8. I love Amos. Amos 8:11. Behold, the days are coming, saith Adonai Jehovah, when I will send a famine in the land. Not a famine of bread nor thirst for water, but of hearing the words of Jehovah. They shall wander from sea to sea, from north to east, and shall run to and fro to seek the word of Jehovah, but they shall not find it. Now, a famine, if you think about it, this is, if I were thinking about the famine described in Genesis, a famine that's so bad that it consumes these huge years of fullness and you can't even tell. Think of a famine for hearing the words of God. Think of people running to and fro in search of it. When there's a famine, and there are literally famines in our world today, when countries experience famine, they'll go as far as they can to find food and water. But this is describing a famine for hearing from God that is just as vital. Think about Deuteronomy chapter 8. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. If you're not hearing from God, the biblical image is one of famine. How can you live without food and water? The biblical writers want us to recognize that neither can you live without hearing from God. It's as important to your sustaining as food, right? Like you have food that others don't know about. It's this spiritual food that we're talking about. Now, I want you to go with me talking about a famine for hearing. Let's go back to Samuel, 1 Samuel this time, in 1 Samuel chapter 3. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to Jehovah under Eli. And the word of Jehovah was rare in those days. There was no frequent vision. Now, listen to this. We're talking about Samuel, the boy whose mother gave him to the priest because she was so thankful that God gave her this son for which she had prayed. She gives him to the priesthood. He sleeps in the holy place. And notice what it says. The word was rare. Now, that word rare can also be translated precious. But the idea is that it's not like even Samuel. He's not hearing from God. He wouldn't know God's voice. In fact, that's the whole point of this story. That the priesthood, that the prophet, I mean, he's not talking. We get this image as we work through Scripture and we bring it on ourselves. It's called the hiding of the face. We've taught on this. James Tabor's taught on this. I've taught on this. But the idea is that you get to a place where you're not hearing from God. Now, I know there are people who are saying, oh, the Lord told me this and the Lord told me that, and thus saith the Lord. You know, and a lot of people say they hear from God. But I'm not going to say they don't, or that you don't if you're listening to me and you say you hear from God. What I'm saying is that it's rare. It's rare in these days, right? Because I believe it's rare in these days. I don't believe it's as common as people claim it is. Now, so Samuel is the boy minister. He's in the holy place, and the word is very rare. Now, look at this. If you keep reading, let's read the rest of the story. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, he's blind, was lying down in his own place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out. This is an image of silent darkness. Think about that. Samuel was lying down within the temple of Jehovah, where the ark of God was. Where's he at? Right? He's as close as you can get. No voice, right? But watch this. Then Jehovah called, Shmuel, Shmuel, Samuel, Samuel. And he said, here am I. And ran to Eli and said, here I am. You called? He said, I didn't call. Go lay back down. So he went and lay down. And Jehovah called again, Samuel. Samuel arose, went to Eli and said, here I am. You called me? But he said, I didn't call, my son. Go lie down again. Now, Samuel did not yet know Jehovah. This is a point I want you to get. He's in the holy place where the ark was. He doesn't know Jehovah. Think about that. And the word of Jehovah had not yet been revealed to him. A lot of times we tend to associate the temple or the ark or whatever with God's abiding presence. And if you're there, then God's there and you hear. He's there all the time. This is where he crashes at night. Jehovah called Samuel again the third time. He arose and went to Eli and he said, here I am. You called me? And Eli perceived that Jehovah was calling the boy. And Eli said to Samuel, go lie down. And if he calls you, you shall say, speak, Jehovah, for your servant is listening. And Samuel went and lay down in that place. And he came to him calling in the as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. And then the story continues. But the point that I want to make is that there are times that even in the holiest of places, with the holiest of people, the people who are destined, if you will, by God to do great and mighty things for him, that there is silence. Now, Samuel, from this point on, does know the voice, and he does hear from God. But how much more so in our day, when people claim that they're hearing, think of this story. We are living, I believe, in many ways, in a time of famine. not of bread and water. But I do believe that the word of Jehovah is rare in these days. Now, this doesn't mean, as I stated a moment ago, that there aren't those that somehow at least believe that they're hearing from God. I'm not suggesting. It's not my place. But I am convinced that we're in a day of famine in some ways, or that it's approaching. A famine in the sense that people are searching, greatly, greatly desiring to hear from God. And in some ways, it's indicative of people when they leave their former religious affiliation because they feel like they're starving. I hear that sometimes. You ask people, you're like, hey, so-and-so, you used to go to the, do you go to the Baptist? I used to go to the Baptist church. Well, why'd you leave it? Well, I just wasn't being fed. Think about that. That's what they say. It's almost like inside they know that they're hungry. They're searching for more. Could this happen in synagogues as well? I don't know. Maybe people leave synagogues and go to other synagogues because they weren't being fed or whatever. Sometimes it might be physically people aren't being fed enough. Like here, you can come here and you can eat good food, physical food, and hopefully our discussions prompt spiritual food. But generally, I think I'm convinced that we are in the days of famine. Look, famine, though, ultimately drives a reunion between Joseph and his brothers. You have to have the famine in order to bring about this reunion. Let me make that connection very clear. Joseph tells Pharaoh, the dream that you've had, the warning about the coming famine is true. It's going to happen. It's fixed by God, and it's coming soon. All right? He tells him those things. And so I'm telling you that this famine of hearing the words of God is the same. Now, the result of, if there wasn't a famine, then the children of Jacob would not have searched for food. They would not have been in Egypt together. There would be no Exodus. There would be, you see where, so we would look at a famine and just say, that famine's horrible. Man, I hate famine. But it takes sometimes the deprivation in order to bring about the fullness. It's just my thought. Now, I think this is anciently as well as prophetically. The point is the same. Now look, if you will, to Joel, the prophet Joel. Now many of you are familiar with this prophecy. But Joel chapter 2, verse 28. In the English Bible, I believe in the Hebrew, it's going to be chapter 3, verse 1. And it will come to pass afterward, in the latter days, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. Even upon the men servant and the maid servants in those days, I will pour out my spirit. Now, there are people who claim that this has already been fulfilled. I do not believe that it's already been fulfilled. I think that this describes something far greater than has ever been seen. I want to contrast, if you will, it's just like when the narrator tells us about the famine, like I just read this. When you're in the midst of it and you can see it clearly, you give more detail, you give more description. So think about Pharaoh. The narrator says, yeah, it was bad. They had these healthy cows, sick cows, and the sick cows ate the healthy cows. Oh, and they had these stalks. They had some good stalk and had some dry ones that were blasted by the east wind. The blasted ones ate the... And Pharaoh said, no, let me tell you. These cows were so skinny, that, you know, you give more detail. Here's my point. When this comes to pass, like, you're not going to have to say, well, I think the Spirit's been poured out. It says, on all flesh, your sons and your daughters will prophesy, your old men. That's not happened yet. Maybe in some way people get a taste, not like this, right? I think this is what we're looking forward to. A pouring out of the Spirit is what we await. This will ultimately, this manifestation, if you will, of the outpouring of the Spirit spoken of by the Hebrew prophets will lead others to recognize, just as Pharaoh did and Nebuchadnezzar did, the working of the Spirit of God in the affairs of men. Join us next week as we talk in detail about this outpouring of the Spirit, the dreams, and the meanings thereof. We'll tie in Joseph and Daniel and these other things. So Shabbat Shalom.